Hi everyone and welcome. And let us start with a meditation. So let us say hello to our bodies that sometimes we do not fully occupy. So arriving gently and slowly. Saying hello to our body. Bringing our attention into our body. And noticing whatever is there that wants to be noticed by us. And I invite you to really notice and start from somewhere, maybe from your feet and your toes, just gently moving them and wiggling your toes and allowing your attention to arrive in and at your body. Hello, feet. Hello, how are you doing? And as we notice different parts of our body, I want to invite you, if it feels right to you and natural, see if you can also bring a sense of thankfulness to that part of your body. Thank you, feet and toes, for holding my weight. Thank you for bringing balance to my body. And if you are able to do that, notice how and if that changes the energy in the rest of your body. Don't forget to breathe consciously and as deeply as it feels right to you. And gently bringing your attention to your legs, your knees, your thighs. Noticing the sensations present. Bringing a sense of thankfulness. Thank you, legs. Thighs for allowing me to move. Thank you, knees, for allowing me to bend and be flexible. If any part of your leg or thighs or knees need a bit of attention. Maybe you want to just use your hands and gently touch that part of your body and just like, hello, hi, I appreciate you. I'm grateful to you. And then gently bringing your awareness and moving to your belly, your gut, your back, lower back, so back and front of your belly. Oh, this is where we hold a lot of stuff, both physically and energetically. Thank you. Thank you for digesting my food. Thank you for holding my fears and courage. Thank you, my back, for holding all the weight, literally and symbolically. And just notice if there is something that you want to thank this part of your body, your gut, your belly in the front, and your lower back. At the back of your body. Thank you. Thank you, my wonderfully, magically functioning body. Thank you. And gently moving up into your chest, your lungs. Your heart. Thank you for the breathing, for the cleansing of the air that you do so meticulously, my dear lungs. And to my heart, thank you for feeling all the emotions, housing every single emotion and feeling. That I personally feel and that of others that I pick up and I invite and I bring them as guests. Thank you. Thank you for your unlimited capacity. I am in awe of you. And just notice how your body. If you're able to do that, relaxes and releases tension, just like us. Somebody sees us. Thank you. I see what you do. Thank you so much. And just gently coming up into your hands and arms and elbows. Thank you for all the things you do. You get things done, my dear hands. I thank you. I acknowledge you. I appreciate you. I'm grateful to you. Thank you. And your throat. Wow, all the sound engineering that happens there. That below all of our science, we still haven't been able to fully duplicate. What a magical place our throat is. Thank you. Thank you for balancing everything in my body, the hormones. Thank you for producing sounds, connections, words. Thank you for echoing my voice to the world. Thank you. And then bringing your attention to your face. Thank you, my dear face, for being. The holder of the introduction to the world. You're the first thing people see. Thank you. Thank you for all the work that you do, the talking, the eating, the breathing, the seeing, the hearing, the showing of emotions, the frowning and smiling. Thank you, my dear face. Thank you. I'm so grateful for you. I know it's a difficult work to do. You're almost always exposed. My other parts of body, sometimes I can cover up, but face is the hard one to cover. You're the most daring part of my body. Thank you. For your courageousness, for facing the world on my behalf. Thank you. Thank you. And then you gently move to your head, to your hair. Wow. Place that houses your thinking. And the place, the top of your head, that connects you to the world of invisible, the border of the visible and invisible world, the Yekibud and Yekinabud of the world. Thank you. And as we connect to our bodies, and hopefully relaxing and releasing the tension in our bodies, I invite you to arrive at the question of who am I? Who is occupying this amazing, miraculous, magical, engineered thing called my body? Who am I? We understand who we are physically. Got it? But who, what essence is truly occupying this body? This physical equipment. Who am I mentally? Who am I emotionally? And more importantly, who am I energetically? What is that energy occupying this physicality? I wonder. I wonder so much about this question that I become full of wonder and so wonderful that I believe that wonderfulness may be the answer to this question. Maybe I have come to wonder at the creations that have already taken place in this world, the physical world, and the invisible world. And by creating, add to the wonders of the world. I wonder, who am I occupying this physical body? You may start with little things that you are, such as being a identity you've given to yourself, the name or the title of what you do, or who you are to your family members or your partners and your children and your friends, or your gender, or the work you do. But those are just a small, small, very tiny part of who you are. We can start there. I can say I'm a mother and I'm a teacher and I'm a spouse and I'm a partner, I'm a daughter. Okay, got that. Yeah. Wonderful. But who are you beyond? And I want to say above that. Who am I? It is so easy to be in the state of survival when we go with the little things we are. As a worker and a parent and a lover and a neighbor and a friend and whatever else you do, there's so many things that I can complain about. But if you invite your question to be asked at the attentionist level, where you have much wider arena to see yourself from and at, problems gently fade away, even though they're still there in your life. And the options that were not available to you before somehow appear. The moment that happens, the wisdom of knowing which option to take somehow arrives as a beautiful, unexpected guest. Oh, I didn't know I was holding that much wisdom. I thought other people are wise, but not me. I thought I had to spend this many hours and those many trainings and do this and be that in order to be wise. But apparently, when I desire it, when I look for it, I can connect to the wisdom that ever existed and will exist. In both the visible and the invisible worlds that I am from. So at this stage, I want to invite you to ask a question if you feel you're in a better state than when you arrived. A question that might be helpful to ask. Whether it's a question about the physical world or your little roles that you have, or something bigger, it doesn't matter. As beholding the space to be in the attentionist vibration might be helpful for you to ask that question. It's like we get a bit of boost as a collective. So, I'm going to join your silence and allow you to pose your question and tap in to the collective consciousness and the wisdom. I'm going to do the same and see if anything interesting arises for us, before us. Right. Okay. Hello, hello. Let me see. How do I? Okay, stop sharing. Okay. Hi, everyone. Good to see you. And happy Sunday. Let's see. Hi, good to see you. Good to see you. As requested, we're sharing the audio recording. Amir, we got it for you and a lot of other people who wrote to me. So, last time from January, basically, I think the last one is available, and we're going to make the audio recording of this one too available just in case. So, let's see. Anybody wants to share anything about either this meditation or anything else? Hopefully about lesson two, but anything else is welcome too. By the way, we're recording and sharing, so just know that your voice and first name may be shared, so but it's only for our own community. But go ahead. Having said that, nobody's going to ask a question. What a silly thing to say now. Okay. So let's see who wants to share, who wants to say anything or ask or share your insights perhaps with us.
Okay, I'm going to share. I've been really trying to pay more attention to my soul. And so you taking us, through this to, who am I in my body thing. And I, at one point, I had this beautiful vision where, because I see this little ember of light in our hearts. Everybody has one. Some of them get covered, and but it's always there and it's always waiting to be lit. And so this, and the soul takes that with it. This is what I got. The soul takes that little ember with it wherever it goes. And so it was as if that part of me was floating in space and just this little light. And the thought came like, of course, the scarcity thought, I'm alone. And then I said, no, look at the beautiful light that's coming to you from all around you. And then I felt like these little droplets of light coming into that little sphere. And I came back into myself, and all of a sudden I realized that those little flickers or those little droplets of light can be taken to anywhere in your body to heal you. And
Wow.
that's, yeah,
Wow.
that
I love
was,
that little, you take it to every experience that you have. I love that.
yeah.
Thank you. It was very visual for me, what you shared, Nikki. It was really, I could picture what you were saying. Thank you. Let's see. Yes, Chris.
Oh, okay. I really love that practice. I loved moving from awareness to being aware of what is aware. Beautiful. I had a question about lesson two. And I was reflecting on the arrival of judgment. And what I came up with was judgment shows up for one of two reasons. One, to create this duality of good and bad so we can move toward good and away from bad, but also to normalize the judgment that's going on inside of us.
Interesting.
I'm wondering how you feel about that, and if there's another reason why the judge usually shows up or judgment shows up.
So it's interesting that you said it that way. I see more that when I personally drop into the world of separation and scarcity, immediately the judge is hired to come. It's part of my protection. You see, because we confuse discernment with judgment. So in attentionism, I have discernment, right? So I evaluate, okay, I'm meeting with Chris, and this is the time I need to leave this time. These are the things that I need to like prepare or do or not do. So there's discernment involved. But the moment I go to the fear and to the survival mode, now I have bad and good. And usually I'm the good and you're the bad. And that's what happens. And then in order to defend myself, it's very interesting we call it judgment, because what does judge do? Judge tries to bring some kind of balance and fairness. You see, in the world of separation, we need these things. I'm feeling bad. I don't want to feel bad. I want to make sure that I make it your responsibility that I'm feeling bad. So the judgment arrives. Men are like this. Americans are like that. People at this age do these. So, or I go either at your age or gender or background or religion. Oh, I think, whoever, like Catholics are like this. And it's a way of protection, really. Judgment is based on fear, and we do it to protect ourselves. It's almost justification. That's just work that a judge needs to do. I'm justifying why I am separated from you. So that's for me more, and of course, what you said is true, and it's protection as well. It's protection because in the world of separation, I need to protect myself because there is other. But in oneness, there is no other to protect myself from. There might be some problems with part of me, just like, my hand may ache, but I don't start making it my enemy. It's like bad hand, or cut it off. I don't want to see my hand anymore. Like, I don't do that. I attend to it because I realize that as long as it's not feeling good, I, the total me, is not going to feel good. But the moment that I'm separated, like imagine your hand is like, a separate, entity. You couldn't care less. And if I say, how come you don't have your hands with you? You say, hands are really bad. They're just not as smart as my mind. They're just silly and stupid. They're all like that. Hands are just like that. You generalize, you judge, you do all these things because you feel separated. So it's a to summarize what I'm saying is that in the state of separation and survival, I use judgment to justify my separation and my protection, and perhaps even my attacking you and disliking you. So I use that as a weapon. Does that go home for you, Chris?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great question. So, lesson two was about the three states, correct? Am I correct? Yeah. It was about the three states that in the story, we talk about survivalism, and then immediately fear comes up. Well, so, are we all survivalists? And the answer is no, we're not. There are other states available to us at any given time on every breath. So I may have arrived in fear and separation, and that's okay. I don't even need to analyze it why I did, but I can show up in being myself and being. I saw a documentary about Liza Minnelli's life. just recently was very interesting. As a performer, and she's a very gifted performer, as she is, because she hasn't played many things. In the beginning of the documentary, she's actually very nervous, and she's like, you can tell that she's not herself. And then as she starts talking and settling into her memory of being outwardly successful, her inwardly success shows up, and she occupies this like very interesting space of loving her story and loving her life. So it's just like that, just that I just arrive in here, that it was the little mitra, just too much noise, and then I arrive here, and then I'm comfortable, and I have far more choices and far more things to see and be and experience, just like that. Let's see. Yes, Kristen.
During at the end, or the question that I posed to myself during the meditation was, how do we love and support each other without anger? In reflecting on, I'm still, I guess, struggling with not judging people, especially given sort of the political climate. I have been trying to embody the wisdom you shared the last time, which was that people don't have all the information, or don't have the, enough information. I started thinking about how do we help history not repeat itself, and how there is a choice involved in that. But I didn't solve any of that because I think I still feel a lot of anger. So I'm still posing the question.
Yeah, no, that's a great question, because these are challenging times, not just politically, but just see at any level. I go to organizations, I see it. I go into families, I see it. And then, of course, there are countries that you see it in, because we're pretty much in tune with the energy of the world. But the best place to start going to that place before I come and share my love and all of that with somebody else is to find it within yourself. Because if I am divided within me, it's very hard to become one with you. So the unity that we speak about in understanding the attentionism principles, and in living it in eternalism state, is really the unity that needs to start within. So if I'm united with me, if I'm one with me, and you saw as we're doing the meditation, I know I noticed how not united I am with my own body. I had to arrive in my body. So I wasn't even one with my own body. How can I feel that with you? So that unity needs to take place, and it's ongoing. And the more we practice, the easier it becomes to apply to the wider world. But let's start where it's possible. Can I be one with myself? Which also means being authentic. Because when I'm feeling this and I'm talking that's separation. So I'm betraying my own unity. I'm feeling really upset, and I see you, and you see how you say, "How are you?" I say, "I'm great." And we think this is positive psychology, which became fashionable. It's not. Now I can say, "I'm doing my best." You see how authentic that is? I'm saying I'm doing my best to stay positive, or working on it, or work in progress, all these things that we can say. So we need to bring that duality and multiplicity that we have created within us. So one day, this would be a very good practice to do. And believe me, I've done it. That's how I know I'm separated. One day, just pay attention to every answer, every interaction that you do, be it in text or in voice or in email or in person. And just see how authentic you can stay. That authenticity is unity with self. Also, not being consumed by only the physical me, by the little Mitra. Not being consumed by that. So as I'm walking the streets of life, oh, I'm upset that, my car, whatever, and my daughter, whatever, and my spouse, whatever, like my mother, whatever, like those are all there. They're not going away. And my colleague, and can you believe the news? But I'm walking at whole of me. Another unity. It's not just a little Mitra, it's also the larger Mitra that we just asked a question about. So it's the little one that is occupying this body and it's only consumed by like the physical world in front of her. Then there's the larger me that sees the bigger picture of life, that I have come here to experience this. And from this point, dear Christine, I am able to understand that every person that doing anything that I like or dislike in this life, at personal or collective, at political or professional level, they are all playing a role, and those roles are completely necessary. It was all part of the whole play. It is necessary for awakening me. So nothing is going wrong. Everything is going as planned. The plan is, and you know how we bring balance to life? When things get really, really bad, we really, really think about balance. And I'm not saying this is bad or that is bad, but I'm saying that's what we call it. They say if you want to stop drinking, drink so much that you make yourself like crazy drunk, and then you get up. And most of the time, if you have ever been to AA meetings, I know I've, sometimes I'm invited and I go, and it's just so precious to be there. That's when I can get up and say, ah, oh, it was so bad. I disgusted myself. I disliked myself. These are the things that I hear. And then I admit that my name is Mitra and I am an alcoholic and I do not wish to be anymore. But sometimes we need to see the extremes. This is all part of the play. Nothing is going wrong. Everything is going according to plan. If you look at the renaissance of history, it always happened when so-called things went wrong. So the renaissance of spirit and soul maybe requires that, because we're just like that. We're just interesting beings. We need to go and take it to the nth degree and then really dislike it and then understand it. So everything is going as planned. You don't need to do anything before you start everything within you. Become that united front that you like to see in the world. From there, the wisdom of what to do next arrives, whether at collective or individual level. But this is hard. We want to do the opposite. We want to correct the outside in order to feel good inside. And I'm saying, look at the inside and watch the outside unfold differently for you. Just try it. Full money back guaranteed. Return it back if it doesn't work.
Thank you.
Thank you. Carlota.
I have a question that, in fact, goes, I don't know, it feels like it's tied. I've been noticing a lot of victim attitude around. So I thought, let's be curious where you're showing up as a victim, too. And so I brought it into my observation, to my practice. And I've noticed where I was showing up as a victim. It surprised me because I wanted to know what is it that it's the next step. So what is in as an attention is that the action has to be taken. And when I was acting as a victim, I realized the victim was like totally depleted of any option. I felt like I was out of any voice or say in whatever I was feeling a victim. And it felt very isolating and lonely. And even though there might be other people feeling the victim in the same place, and you can see, and then it's comforting. It's like you're isolated, but you're recomforted because other people feel the same. And then I thought, okay, then in this one thing that I'm catching myself being a victim, and I catch myself in more than one that week that I've been practicing, what I can do. And then what I realized I could do was, it's so related to what you were saying, like, okay, what is going on? Where I'm lacking information? Which are my choices in there? And where I can be proactive. And in fact, there was a lot of owning whatever was going on, like kind of like what you say, adulting. Yeah, the victim can react in me in different ways, but one of it's like a tantrum.
Yes, a kid.
Nobody see it, but it's like, and I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, and I can see my kids when they get into this zone, they don't see any other thing. They don't even hear me when I'm talking. And I might be giving them a better option, but they don't listen, can receive the information. So I was like, if I shut up and calm myself, I can see which options I have and go with more. But I would love to hear about that.
Yeah, it's very interesting, these characters that show up, and until we pay attention to them, we don't know. I was working with someone who's actually a teacher, in herself, a very, very seasoned teacher, and I was working with her around her relationship with food, and it was really fascinating. And as I said, she's a very aware person, has worked on herself for many decades. And as soon as we started talking about food, first she started telling me how when she was younger, and she's not that old, but younger, she never had to worry about what she eats, which I could relate to. Like, she was a slim child or youngster. And then now that she has to be careful, she immediately sounded like a rowdy child. It's like, I don't want you. I don't want to be careful. I've never had to. And I just looked at her and said, oh my God. Do you hear yourself? She said, what? I said, you sound like an entitled brat. She said, what? I said, yeah. It's like, you're like talking to universe like that? She said, oh, I never paid attention to that. I said, yeah, you're just like so entitled. Like, you gave it to me earlier. How come you're taking it away now? Bad universe. I don't want to be careful. And we both started laughing because I do that in sessions. And if you've ever been my client, you understand that I imitate the voice that is within the person. And they sort of like, they can recognize it. It's just like, and then I exaggerate it, of course. And then it really goes home for them. And then she said, oh my God, I never heard that voice. I said, it was very obvious to me. So that voice is a character, is a character within us. It does exist. It is in me, and that's fine. But now is taking, remember the seats that I talk about, that there's this long table and all the characters are sitting around the table, and they're all part of me. There is the kind me, there is the like don't mess with me. There is like there's so many me's. But the question is, who's sitting at the head of the table? Who is deciding even which character needs to come and speak? Usually what happens is without awareness, one of these characters, usually the loudest one, takes the head of the table seat without our knowing. And before we come to ourselves, that character has become me in that moment, at least, or most of the time. And then it's like almost I don't have a hold of that person. It's almost like I don't have a say. But the person who needs to be sitting at that long, long table is the aware me, because the aware me can include all of these. Because sometimes I need to be, the attorney me, I call it. Watch me go and talk to someone that I think has treated someone or myself unfairly. I sound like I'm the attorney of the world, but I don't need to have her speaking all the time. Otherwise, I will have no connection with my loved ones. I will not have my heart open because that character is talking completely logically. And it can repeat everything, talk legality, talk punishment. But, she exists, but I don't want her all the time at the head of the table, or everybody will be afraid to talk to me. They think I'm going to sue them and take them to court if they say something inappropriate. But when I need her, she comes really handy. So here's the answer, shorter answer to what you were saying, Carlota. We don't want to destroy or get rid of, because that's the mistake of any of these characters. There is a reason, even if it is for awakening me, that that character exists. Without that voice of that woman that was talking to me, I wouldn't remind her and she wouldn't wake up to the fact that she is really being a brat with her own health. She's saying, I don't want to. I want to eat all the things I want and I still want to feel good and look good. It's like, no. At this age, your youth took you there. At this age, you need to be respecting this body and putting what is really called for in it if you want to use it in a proper way. If not, that's fine. You could just do what you want, but just don't expect life to take care of you like that. You're responsible for you. So all these characters are there. All of them are worthy. All of them have a purpose and they need to be there because they also have a message for you, they aware you. As long as the head of the table is the aware you and the awake you, the adult you, as I call it. You like that word because I usually say adult up to people. That is adulting up. I told that woman, that colleague, the same thing, adult up. And if you don't want to, that's fine too. Just know that you're being a child in this particular area of your life. So there's a purpose. Hear it. Fantastic. It was fantastic to hear your own voice and say, okay, that's the character they showed. But don't say that's me. That's the character. It's just a character.
Thank you, Mitra.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Sabina.
Hi, Mitra. Two
Hi.
questions. On the email you had sent saying that it's best to get the direct recordings through our phone. That one, I don't know how, I don't see that last email. If someone can send that to me so I can listen to the classes through that, because I
Sure.
can't find that. And two is, without it getting personal, but on the judgment and all that, being a part of a life that I don't know exactly how to put it into words, but kind of being in a family or situation where you are dependent on this lifestyle and that person, and that's how you were raised and learned that, okay, you will end up being in a family and dependent, unfortunately. And now I have to wake up and realize that I can't go on like that because that person, I can't depend on them. So I feel very lost and I don't know where to start and I don't know where that adult in me is. So I am currently, as much as I'm practicing the attentionist mode, I am back on survivalist mode because I need to survive and take care of myself and my children. So, do you have any suggestions on how I can regain that? Because I am extremely, the fear has come back again.
Yeah. And that's okay too. First of all, I'm sorry to hear that. Secondly, that fear also has information. And you use two words. You said, I have learned. meaning I have my background, whatever family background or experience, has conditioned me into being codependent. And life is calling right now. If you put it that way, it becomes so much easier to work with. And life is calling me to become independent. It's simple as that. I can give you the dramatic version of that, but it's a simple calling, simple calling. And I know at the price of repeating myself, I repeat some of the stories. I keep reminding myself of the story of my teacher staying with me for the week, my Buddhist monk teacher. And when I was taking him to the airport, I asked him for such feedback. And he refused, and I insisted, and he said, and my kids were younger, he said about the way you mother your children. I almost hit the car in front of me because I thought I was such an amazing mother, says me. And I said, my motherhood? He said, yes. I said, what about my motherhood? My children are my life. I do everything for them. He said, Meaning that's the problem. And then he asked a question as it was his way to teach me. He never answered like I do. He always asked questions. He said, tell me two, three times in your life that you really, really grew. First time was when I lost my father. I was very young. Second one, when I lost my country. I was still very young. And I gave him a third one. And he said, and how dare you to take that opportunity away from your children? I want to say the same thing to you. This is your opportunity. Universe, as a wonderful parent, is offering you that difficulty that it's needed for you to pivot. And you came to this world codependent, your family, your upright, up, I don't know, whatever, I'm just assuming, told you that's good. And now, universe is offering you an opportunity, saying you're on your own now, and we trust that you can do it. And if that trust wasn't there, because universe has a lot of intelligence, if it didn't know that you can do it, it would never offer you this opportunity. So you need to activate your choice and say, I know it's bad. I know it's difficult. I know I've never done it, but I also know I can do it. To really welcome it, because you're no longer a child. You can welcome every time. And I'm saying this from experience. It's not like I've got it all and then I'm talking like that. Right now, as I'm speaking, my loved one is going through a very challenging time. And you don't know how easy it is to put my hand in it and I go, take it away, love them, leave them, love them, leave them. They need to find their way. And you know what? The fact that I have found my way in a similar situation that they're in tells me that they can too. But I had to be not helped by human beings in order for me to connect to my above human beings' powers. When I was truly stuck, when I really didn't have anybody, I mean, I'm talking being in a country and a city that I didn't have a phone number to call and say, Seppi, your best friend in such and such said to give you a call. I was walking and I was thinking, if I die tonight, my children don't know who to call. And I found my way. And you know what? It's not that wow, because every other parent has found their way if they wanted to. That's the big if. If they didn't stay in survival mode. So what I tell you is don't start doing anything. Trust you. Stop telling your misery story to yourself and see it as an opportunity that this beautiful, kind, parent universe is offering you to grow, just like when your child came from school and said, Mom, Mitra pushed me and she was horrible. And you so wanted to go and correct that, but you just said, you got to deal with it. I can't come to school with you every day. You know, one day you need to just stand up to Mitra and say, you can't do this to me. We wanted to, but we couldn't. So see yourself supported by the universe that has the best for you in its heart, truly. And then ask people for help. Because we're doing it the other way around. We're saying, help, 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 help. What should I do? So it's like, shh. The biggest help lives within you. And then in the implementation of the wisdom I arrived at, then I call you and I say, Seppi, I want, fill in the blank, I want to find a home. I want to find a job because that's what my wisdom told me. Do you know of any openings? Do you know of any place that I can go and start? You know? That's how you start. You start within and then seek support without. But within is the first step. We do it opposite. I panic, panic. I'm bad, I'm bad. Okay, help, help, help. And I'm sorry, with all due respect to the other people in our lives, bunch of people with a lot of shortcomings are incapable of compensate for my shortcomings. They're all drowning themselves one way or another. Some by having, some by not having. It's the same problem. So I can't ask them to help me when they have been unable to help themselves just because they have what I'm missing. But if I go within and very clearly ask what I want, you see, be precise. Mitra, I need a job. But Mitra, I need help. I don't know what that means. Help with what? Summarize, go within, connect to your wisdom, identify what you need help with, come out, ask because you know a lot of people, and take one step, one action towards materializing that. So, if my example, I'm going to continue with my example of finding a job. The first thing is to just put a very basic, I don't know, resume together. If you haven't done anything, you probably help someone to do their business. You probably can go and do something to help someone to put it on there. Currently, I don't know, supporting Mitra with her research project. I don't know, something that means something. Put it together and start there. That's one action. You may never use that. It's just because we're physical beings, we like to have physical actions that feels mind settled. Said, oh, developed a resume. Okay, I feel good about that. So you need to take charge, and that adulting up, as harsh as it sounds, is the right statement. You were a codependent, and that's a child behavior when we are codependent. And that's fine. It served you as long as it did. But life says, no, I'm not going to let you come to this world as codependent and leave this world as codependent. That there's no growth in that, whether the dependency be financial or emotional or mental. We want you, because we see you have capacity to leave as. And the ultimate state is interdependency, but at least as an independent being.
I see. Even if the child inside of me will be like, oh no, I don't understand. This is a foreign language. I don't even know where to start. Let's say I have done the resume, I've sent it, and then it gives up. Oh, I did it already. It's not working. So then it's like kicking its legs inside. So I should still push through that and believe in myself and know that the wisdom will come still and trust in that. Because I almost have lost the trust within me as well.
Yeah, push through might not be the right word. Go through that. And remember the table that I said, long table, many characters. Allow the adult to sit at the table and see the child going like a mother that, you know, we take the children to a restaurant, you see it everywhere. It's like the child is going up and down, making noises and doing all the different difficult things. And the mother says, it's okay. Food is coming. Settle down. The mother doesn't start panicking because the child is like, ah, you don't do that. As a good mother, you say, you know, it's okay, honey. Food is coming, and you do the same thing with the child in you that is panicking and saying, I don't know. Remind her how many things she didn't know and she learned. Were you a spouse before? No. Were you a mother before? No. Did you live? I don't know where you were born. Were you born here?
No.
Okay, in Iran. Perfect. So did you, were you born here? No. But did you, it was English your mother tongue? No. So obviously you're capable of learning new things, right? Did you
Yes.
move to this home? Did you always live in this home? No. Did you take this course in your previous lifetime? No. So a lot of things are new and we don't see it as new. Obviously, you're capable of learning and growing and getting into a new experiences. Why not choose the experience that you want to get into? Let it be not accidental. Let it be the person you want to be in this course. We actually develop an avatar of ourselves. And you can do a sort of half avatar. That new avatar is that I'm mother and a good parent to myself. And when the child jumps up and down, I hold her, I hug her, I love her, but I do not let her to run the show in my life.
I see. Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate your help. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Yes, Carlota.
I just want to say that that was even a more extended answer to my question. It fed so much what I was asking. Thank you so much. I was thinking, in fact, that process that I'm doing is remothering myself.
Yes, reparenting. Yeah, exactly. Yes. That's a great, and that's what you're doing, that you're doing what people who brought us to this world couldn't do. If I left myself the way I was parented, I wouldn't be at all where I would like to be. And I respect my parents. It doesn't, it's not like disrespect to them, but one left when I was young, left his body, and the one who stayed, I mothered. So if I stayed with that, I would never ever get to a place that is, you know, that I'm happy with so that I can go and get to a place that I really want to go to. So this is a process of reparenting yourself. We need to parent ourselves because look at our parents and understand that they also had their shortcomings. And that can't be my reason for being where I am. That was just the starting point. And I'm saying this, and I'm realizing that many people are very happy with the way they were parented. So I want to respect that and I acknowledge that. But most of us aren't. And that's okay too. You can still love them, you can still respect them, but you also need to see the holes in their parenting that you, as an adult, an aware adult, as I call it attentionist, can fill. I can't be forever talking about those holes and using them as an excuse for how I run my life. That is being, we talk about that in this class too. That's being the victim either of my genes or the history, which how I was parented is part of. So I'm just a victim. Why do you do this? Oh, my father did that. Why do you do that? Oh, my grandfather was this. It's just like it doesn't work like that. It doesn't bring growth at all. You accept that as a given, and there is a comma, and that you move forward with that which you would like to experience. It was just a starting point. It was just a brush on this beautiful tableau of painting. And then the creation and the art begins with you as an artist that is painting the tableau of your life. So on that note, let us take a 5 or 10 minutes, Nikki. 5 minutes? 5 minute break.
Say
Thank
one little thing before,
Yes, yes, yes. Go ahead.
very fast. Just when you were saying the brush, I was rephrasing what you said, let it not be an accident, let it be your choice. And this image of a splash of paint in the wall, and the fact that you take the brush and do something from out of it.
With
And
it.
you mentioned the tableau, I'm like, oh my God.
There you
But
go. There you
yeah.
go. Yes, there you go. That's probably where I picked it up because that's how it came to my awareness. Thank you for the image. All right, see you in five. Go ahead, Kristen.
I wanted to just, I really connected with the last couple of points. And one of the things that I have been realizing is that it's like I have this childhood lens, and I, like, for whatever reason, have been trying to, like, put all of my, like, learnings or, like, my future or my feelings, like, that always have had to go back through, like, go through that lens when I was a kid and, like, come back out. And it's like I'm starting to see, like, now that I have a choice to say, like, I don't have to, like, circumvent everything, go back through my childhood experience, relive it, and then get it out. And, like, I'm, like, trying to create sort of like a new pathway to just go, like, straight into a new interpretation of it so that I don't have to, like, go through, like, relive that pain or victim mindset of that experience as a kid, and envision a new way. So I don't know, just all of that really connected with me. And I also really connected with Sepeda in terms of, like, jobs and careers. It's something that, even as someone that has been, independent somewhat in that realm for a really long time, I often have found places where I'm not the right fit, and I often want to be a kid screaming and kicking and getting out or trying to find a new pathway. So I wanted to let you know that even if it's a new spot, it's a spot that I myself go to often. And if you want any brainstorming help, I'd be happy to do that, because I have a lot of experiences with that, and I could happily look at your resume too.
I will reach out to you. Thank you so much for that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
See how it happens?
Yeah, this is great.
It's
Thank you.
really interesting, Seppi, how life works. Yes, and I liked what you said, that how everything you do and say goes through that filter. And I feel, I don't know, I don't have any scientific evidence for this, but I feel like when the great minds, like Jung, who is, or Freud, when they talked about the childhood and the effect of it in our psyche, especially with Jung, I know for sure that the intention was not for that to be a station in our life. It was supposed to be a tool for understanding ourselves better. And somehow, as human beings do, we got stuck and obsessed with that. First, we reject it. So we said only crazy people go for these kind of work. Then we brought it and made it part of our life. And now it's like we can't let it go, that it is, I am identified by the names that they have given me, or the experiences that I was supposed to review in order to understand myself better, so that, like, it's a transient thing. It wasn't supposed to be a place we stay. So who are you, Mitra? Oh, I'm a person whose mother had, I don't know, and people, like, tell me all these, like, names that they say, OCD and ADHD, and had, like, multiple personality disorder and was dyslexia. And I was like, that's not who you are. That was the experiences that you had. But we got stuck with the psychological analysis and information that we received through that era, which I now realize what the conditions were, what my parents' conditions were, what my condition as a result of their condition were. And then we got stuck. And that's part of this filtering. And it's really amazing, the most amazing people with most amazing wisdom and intelligence often throughout the day refer to their experiences and the diagnosis of their parents, or the diagnosis of them that came through their parents. And that tells me, I mean, I got that, and I can tell you all the things that I've got, but it's not something that I walk through life with. I don't wear it. It's not a, like, I don't wear that band around my hand saying, like, I am this. No, it was something I experienced. I also went to Rome. I also went, like, these are just experiences of life. But we get stuck on it, and that becomes the problem. So, in a way, the society is encouraging that. When every post, everything you see and hear, every discussion goes around like the diagnosis, psychological diagnosis. So, first it was we just died at the age of 30 somethings. Then we got physical, medical diagnosis for our physicality. You have this, you have that. Then all the medications came. Then we w moved to psychological. And then psychological first, it was bad, bad, like everything else that first is bad, bad. We rejected. You hear this, Seppi? That's what we do as human beings. Anything new we cannot handle because we feel secure and safe with things that we know. So then we rejected it, then we accepted it, and now we just can't let it go. Everybody is defining their life. Exaggeration, not everybody. Many people are defining their life and themselves through the psychological filter of their experiences as a child and their parents. It's like, yeah, got it. My parents had this. Good for them, or sorry for them, whatever it might be. I can move forward. I am an independent soul experiencing something completely different. If that wasn't the case, then we will all be photocopies of our parents. There would be no progress. There would be no invention. There would be no new way of being or thinking or doing, which is not true in history, especially nowadays. Everything is like changing. Okay, so if everything is changing, then change is possible. Then let me change with awareness and choice. That's the whole thing we're doing here. That's what the whole attention is, to activate our choice consciousness. We are changing. You and I are changing. Since last year, we haven't changed. This last life, since last night, we have changed. But I don't know if that change was by my design or not. So thank you. Great point to bring, Kristen. Yeah, I understand that. We all do that, by the way. Yes, Carlota. Yeah, there you.
A little light bulb just came. I think I hear Kristen a lot because I've been hearing societies telling us we try to heal our past child instead of like parenting our present adult.
Yeah,
That's why
good
it's
point.
so hard. It
Yes.
came when she was sharing that.
Yes, that's a good one. Healing the past child instead of, what did you say?
Parenting
Parenting
our present adult.
present adult. That was a great way of putting it. Yes, it is that we can do, but we can also hold the child. It's not that we want to ignore the child. See, the problem is that people think it's either or. In energetic world, it includes the physical, mental, emotional. It doesn't exclude them. You hold the child so dearly. It's the first thing I told Seppi, that you hold the child. You acknowledge the little girl, the little child. I see you. I love you. But mommy has to do things now. You don't run the show just because you're screaming. So I give you that which you were lacking. And I'm going to do what I need to do as an adult. I don't stop there. And it's also good to know, by the way, I wanted to say that it is good to know that we did experience those things. That's a very useful information. But just as a point of reference, not as an explanation and definition of who I am. Yeah, it stops us. It really stops us. Yes, go ahead, Kristen.
One other thing I've been imagining is like trying to like imagine as the child like having fun and doing some like childlike things and having like envisioning more just spontaneity and things like that, and then also recognizing the fear that I had as a child, but then as an adult saying, you know what, it's okay, like I tuck the child in and say you don't have to worry about this, you don't have to be scared about this, and just you know, acknowledging and recognizing her, but then like saying, like, okay, you can like chill and like do your child thing while I go over here.
I like that. Chill and do your child thing. Exactly. And be fun. Be fun. Because the child has a gift for you. You don't want to ever get rid of her. You want her to be there and have fun. It's just you don't want her to run the show. And that there's a huge difference. It's just like taking your child to a park and saying, go and play, have fun. In fact, watching them and watching the child in you having fun and being playful is very rewarding. As long as that child doesn't drive you back home and drive your car, because it will be quite dangerous. You won't get home. That's what we do. We do too much. This balance is so important here that I bring a balance. Celebrate a fun, playful child, but I also understand the child shouldn't be make these decisions. So it's you benefit from the both sides, and it's wonderful. Yeah, as a child, I remember I was an unusual child. I said unusual things. I did unusual things. So this unusualness was not put down, but nothing that was celebrated. And I remember when my children were growing up, and of course, anybody that wanted to be my child, any soul had to be unusual. They are very unusual people. And we celebrated our unusualness. We laughed about how so-called abnormal we are. And I normalize that for them because we are all abnormal. Norm is a sick place to be at. Norm is basically pushed on us that I have to look like you and I have to be like you. And if I'm not, that must be something wrong with me. Either physically, I don't look like you, or these posts that I see. That, I don't know many people that look like that. And those that I know and look like that, they are sick. They are sick. They eat things and they throw it out in their napkin, or they go to the bathroom. Those are the people that I know look like these social media people. And honestly, I hope no child is like that. I don't care how good that looks. I don't care how much the society promotes that. I just hope no child ever looks like that by force. In a healthy, balanced way, sure. So as an adult, as a parent to my child and truly to my children, I celebrated abnormality. I mean, our joke was, and you probably heard that too, my daughters would say, "Mom, Mom, Earthians are coming. We should be quiet because we saw ourselves from another planet." And that was so beautiful. That allowed them to be who they are. They look the way they want to look. They do what they want to do. None of their lives are normal. They're not going to be the married, wonderful people that will give me five grandchildren, and good for them. If they wanted to do that and do that, I would be happy to receive that too, by the way. I'm not saying be abnormal. I'm saying be you. And if that is abnormal, great. If that is normal, great. But I don't determine who you are. Nobody has that right. So, great discussion today. I love what we're talking about. Yeah. It's amazing how many people are suffering in silence. They just say, "Shouldn't I do this?" I say, "No. No, I don't know who said that. You need to do what you need to do. I don't know what you should do. But you don't know my family." I said, "I don't care that much about your family's standards. I do care about you and your well-being and the reason you're here." I got a heart from somebody who's silent today. Remains unnamed. All right, let's see. Who's next? Do we have? Yes, Nikki, go ahead.
I wanted to share this because yesterday I was at an event with an organization that I had belonged to in Dallas. Okay, and it didn't end well in Dallas. What was happening with that organization, and so here I am in this new place, and I'm sitting next to this lady, and she asked me a question about it, and all of a sudden that old survival me came up. And started to say something negative. And it was so incredible because my attentionist jumped up in me, says, "What are you doing?" And it made me realize how a situation or something that's happened in your past even attached to a different organization, totally different people in within the organization can bring up that scarcity person in you, and just having that, knowing what we've learned is that, my attention is jumps up. And it was so funny because it was almost like this person jumped up in my head going, "What are you doing?" And it helped me switch, the
Yes.
conversation. So yeah,
Yeah,
it
that's
was
good.
good.
Good to
Yeah.
hear those voices. Good.
Yeah.
There are so many of them. And there are like so many ways you can answer that. If like it, actually somebody did ask me about the class I used to take, said, what happened? I said, oh, I learned so much. I learned so much that remains to be interpreted. I learned so much, and that was it. That's all they're going to get out of me about that. So, yeah. Yes, Chris.
What we were talking about reminded me of something that came up recently. I was sitting, as I often do, sitting with old friends or old coworkers, and we start talking about the past. And it never fails that someone will bring up a story about me that I cannot remember. I don't remember being there. I don't remember saying those things, doing those things. And what hit me recently is how remarkable it is that for 40 years, I built my identity out of painful memories instead of these other memories. And we do that. It's just unbelievable that we have all of these things happening in our lives, and we just let so much of the good stuff slide away, and we hang on to these bitter or painful memories, and then we create an identity out of that. And it's like as soon as I realized that, everything just started to get really shaky in a great way, like flimsy. The whole identification process became a bit more transparent to me.
Wow.
And I think in choice, we can choose to just give a little more importance, right? To the times when we're compassionate, the times when we were kind, the times when we were loving. That's who we really are.
That was profound. Yeah. Very interesting. So the construct that you're remembering, which is just a negative construct, is a construct of the rational mind. Because in survival, we only stay there because you see, I have to survive. You see how it connects to that? But the moment you are invited to come out of that, you realize there's more to me than that. I'm also whatever, whatever, and more. And yeah, I did. I probably made a lot of mistakes and I messed up a lot of places. And I also did a lot of good things. I also am worthy. I'm also really good. And I'm also changing. And I'm also capable of being even in a better place than where I am now. So it's interesting. Other people need to remind you how good you are. You would, God forbid, if ever, say, because we're afraid, again, in lack of choice, it's either saying good things and being an ego or being critical and going at yourself with a whip. So in fear of ego, I go there. It's a very fascinating thing to understand that, we do have a choice. I am that and more. And just watch me be more and more and more.
And
Thank you. That was very profound, Chris.
thanks. And I know I picked this up from you, like those painful memories have value because there's a lesson in there.
Yes.
But we go too far and we identify with it.
Yes.
So if we can just look at the painful memory with curiosity instead of folding it into who we are, right?
Yes.
That's the work.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you know how you know that you have learned the lesson? This is just an amazing discussion we're having, guys. So when you say, "Oh, Mitra, do you remember this?" Let's say it's a very negative experience. And I smile and say, "Yes," meaning the feeling that it brings, not out of denial, but out of learning and growing. It's the feeling of satisfaction, not regret. It's like, yeah, I learned so much about that. I learned so much through that. So once you, the only reason the past is important is because you may have not learned fully from that. It is not a place to go and start crying and regretting and lamenting. It's a place to go to learn. It's a different L, not lament, but learn. And then get out. And the next time that's brought out, next time you say, "But remember, you were this and that." And then you say, "Yes, wasn't I? Somebody was being celebrated." A memory came a while ago, and there was a award ceremony and all of that. And a person in the audience got up almost for the purpose of embarrassing the person that was being honored. And got up, people were getting up and saying good things about this person. And the person got up and said, "Opposite of what I heard today, I remember the days that you lived in this small home and you had nothing and your family was this, and we actually helped you guys." It was an old neighbor, apparently from like 40 years ago or something like that. I can't remember the details, but I remember like the tone, was like, like, "You're not that good and you didn't come from this and that." And I watched the person who was receiving the award was one of my clients, so that's why I was there. And I looked at him and I said, "Please don't go to fear. Please don't go to fear," because we had worked a lot on like that recovery of the past. And I watched him, and he looked at him, he looked at me, he closed his eyes, he took his time. Oh, I get shivers when I say this. He opened his mouth and he said, "I thank you, sir, for reminding me that what a long way I have come. This is really, really a gift that you happen to be in the audience today, because I just realized I had forgotten what a long way I have come." So the person was putting down this client of mine, both financially, academically, and being a bad person, like we were playing and you were a horrible child or something like that. And he bought it and he got it and he turned it into gold. I told you, we're becoming alchemists. The more stone we have, the more gold we end up with. And I just, like a proud parent, looked at this person. I said, "Well done, well done, well done." It's like, yes, you're right. Instead of saying, "No, I wasn't there. I'm so sorry to hear that you saw me this way," starting to defend himself, he said, "Absolutely, thank you. What is your name?" he said. "No, my name is George." It's like, "Great, thank you, George. Thank you so much for coming today, making the effort to come here and remind me. What a blessing that is." And I looked around, and the audience were so impressed by him. And I thought, yeah, that a boy, that a boy. So that's what it's good for, Chris. Even if it is negative, even if you remember it, or I remind you of, "Do you remember when you first blah, blah, blah?" You say, "Thank you. Thank you for reminding me. There was a purpose." Well, this man drive, apparently he said he drove for 2 hours to be there to just make sure he puts a knife in somebody's heart and remind him how bad he used to be and what a bad life he used to have. But yeah, you turn it into gold when you know what you are doing. All right, let's see. The good thing is I created an option, a choice for us to finish anytime between 90 to 120 minute time. So anytime you feel there's not much to say, we can just love each other and leave each other for the rest of the day. Seppi.
I have a question about the fact that is this considered being codependent if your mood depends on if the people around you that are closest to you are doing well, not doing well that day, or in general, their life is up and down, but my internal every mood of myself depends on how they feel, or if they're gonna do what I want them to do and they don't, so then I don't have my peace. So is that considered codependent?
Yes, we have a bad name for it too. We call it emotional beggar.
Cool.
I know
Thank
it's a bit extreme, but having said that, let me allow a bit of balance there. Of course, I am affected. I'm a human being. I can't just walk and dance while like homes in LA is burning, are burning. So the question is, where is that balance? So and also, if you want to help, let's say those people are like your loved ones, what you do, you understand the energetic invisible world, the Yekina Bud of the world. Let's say I'm in home with my loved one and they are not in a good place. If I go down and meet them at the vibration that they're at, I am dabbling that no good, not helpful vibration. So, because I love them, I'm going to keep my vibration up. I don't need to sing and dance and, add to their pain. But energetically, I hold the space instead of go to the space they're at. I hold the space. So, let's say the person is panicking or is very negative. I say, oh, I see that you're not in a good place. Is there anything I can do to help? No, there's nothing you can help. My life is over, blah, 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 whatever. They may say, you say, sorry to hear that. I'm here anytime you want to talk or anytime you need to help. I'm going to make a cup of tea for you. Would you like one for tea for me? Would you like one too? You see, you are staying, you're the stable now. You're the anchor. Instead of you being the wobbly energy in the room, you allow somebody else who is having a difficult time to be that wobbly person. Wobbly energy, and you are the anchor. There is no advising involved in that, by the way. It doesn't mean that you say, put your act together, get up and laugh, which is the most ridiculous thing human beings say. I'm down, I'm really hurt. And somebody says, just wash your face and laugh. Like, what? You out of your mind? Are you not respectful to my pain? Can't just do that. But you can show me that your energy is helpful. You are in a different place and you can say what you say, which is, I'm here to help. And I see you. I see that you're having a difficult day, but I don't need to meet you at your energetic level. And I don't need to advise you to get you out of there. I can just hold a higher vibration. Hopefully it will help you. And if it doesn't, that's fine. At least I didn't drop mine and double the lower energy in the room. You become the adult. You hold the space. So not only do you need to be adult for you, you also need to be an adult for your loved ones and later for the whole human being nation.
I see. Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Sure.
I just wanted to add something because I was thinking about, you mentioned about how we really got to take what we learn from things. And just so those of you that are newer understand, is that situation yesterday, I came home and then I wrote in my journal, like, what's the lesson here? What do I have to still work on, or what was it trying to show me? The good part was that it shows me how far I've come by catching it, by letting, that the choice of letting that other, the tensionist come out. And then the other part was that how easily we can fall back into scarcity mode and get back into those old ways of habits if we don't keep that attentionist alive in us and that place of choice. So I just wanted to share that.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a great reminder. Yeah, of course. So first we don't even know we're there. Then we know we're there, but we're there, meaning in the scarcity and in the survivalist mode. Then we go there every now and then, but we notice it like you did. No, we notice it and we come back. We come back to this place. And you know what was fascinating about what you shared, Nikki, was that the old memories, this is the key. That's what usually causes us going to the old habits. Something from the past provokes the memory of the way we were. That's why the most difficult place to be acknowledged and to be the new you is in family settings. Because immediately you go back to the memories of being that person. And for Nikki, it was that memory of like an organization that she belonged to in her past. So that provoked the way she used to be. But thankfully, she, through her practice, through, asking just that question, I wonder what this challenging experience is telling me. What is it that I need to learn and take with me? Then those things happen less, and we come back to our choice faster. That's what happens through practice. And I always say, start practicing where it doesn't matter. Let's just see when you are talking to a family member on the phone, and it's not a provoked or provoking conversation. Just try there and see if you can stay you. And keep your own vibration or even raise your vibration through that challenging conversation or just a conversation. And then you will know what to do when there is an argument happening in the family and you are prepared because you have practiced. So thank you.
Yeah, and I just wanted to add that it was interesting because there were so many good things that happened before, the other thing, the more uncomforting things happen in this organization. And so how that can so easily, the negative things can mask all the good that
Yeah.
came from it. Yeah.
Yes. This is what exactly what Chris was saying, the same, that because the rational mind, we've talked about this many times, loves negative information. You know why? Because that's the information it needs to protect you from. It's just, I always use the security guard analogy. If a security guard is keeping me safe, like, these people, like celebrities that walk with them. What is their job? What should they pay attention to? Danger. So they look around and they see, okay, Mitra's sitting there. She seems to be safe. But there's a young man sitting there and they have their own biases. Must be this person. So they pay attention. They're looking for danger. So in the state of survival, your mind is doing its job. It's looking for danger. So it says, yeah, you had a good time. Oh, okay, no problem. But there was this bad memory, wasn't it? Let's talk about that. So it's doing its job. Your job is to get out of survival mode and say thank you to the rational mind. Not now. You can rest. I'm in a safe spot. And I like to, by choice, be in a different place. And then the rational mind settles down and it no longer looks for all the wrong things that there are, all the wrong things you have done, all the wrong things that exist in people and in the world. So it's only hired and activated when you're in survival mode. That's all. All right. Go ahead.
I was, as you were talking about that, I was remembering a time when I was talking to my dad and kind of we had like the same conversation and on the phone pretty much every week lately, which is, he had fallen and he needs to do the PT and exercises and things like that, but he's like falling into not doing them because he's frustrated because he's like, I'm back to square one, and I thought I was at level seven, and now I'm like at zero, and I get it. And but like the first couple times we talked about it, I was like, like I was talking to my kids, like, but you need to do this. This is why you need to do this, and then my mom would report every week like, well, he hasn't still hasn't done his PT, and And then the last time, I just more so held space for him and was like, oh, I can see how that's really frustrating for you. So I just kind of made that mental shift of like what the difference was in that. And it's hard for me to not tell him what to do. In some ways, I feel like my dad is now, I'm like relearning what I didn't do with my kids when they were kids. Like, but like, this is how you do it. Like, I have more awareness. But anyway, it's good to realize that. And then he was honest and he was like, yeah, it's really frustrating. And it's like, yeah, it is really frustrating. And I have myself felt that way. And I know I avoid sometimes things like that when I injured my knee or whatever it was. And it's like, I don't want to go back to square one. I want to be here, but I'm not. And you're fighting it. So anyway, just sort of recognizing that was a good realization. And then my question is, how do you encourage other people in your household to hold space for you? And because oftentimes I feel like they're trying to solve it for you, and it's like, and they might not have done a lot of the, aren't practicing it actively. I find myself getting frustrated more quickly because I'm not, no, don't, I don't, I can say that, like, I don't need like to solve this for me, but I also want that person to do it more naturally.
Yeah. So to answer that question, first of all, I wanted to say that you need to understand and acknowledge me before you advise me. So remember that when it comes to your father, acknowledge how hard it is and understand his position. And then if there is anything that you need to advise him. But on the question of how do we make sure that our family members or our loved ones do the same thing for us. You can only do your best. We don't know if we can, but there are two ways you can do your best. One is to show them, meaning when they were activated, if you consistent with that behavior and you can even name it, you can say, I'm holding this space here for you. Let me know when you need help. I'm here to help. You see, those vocabularies are very, very helpful. The other way, when you are really needing it, is to be very clearly requesting it. So I have a lot of professionals as my friends, and I know if I share anything, they will go into their professional sort of behavior. So before I share, and they say, so Mitra, tell me about this. I say, I will, but I just want you to hold the space for me. I do not need any feedback right now. It's too hot for me. You see, I just, will they do it? I don't know. But at least I have clarified what I'm seeking. So when you don't say what you're seeking and you expect them to deliver it, it's a really irrational request. You need to, one, guess what I'm wanting, two, guess it right, three, do it after guessing it right. Like it's almost an impossibility we're asking. But if I come to you and I say, Kristen, do you have 10 minutes? You say yes. Say, I want to share something with you, but I just want you to hold the space and hear me out. Right now, I don't need any feedback. I don't need any advice. I just want a friendly space to share my issues. And there's a good chance that at least you understood what I need. Will you do it? I don't know. It depends on, as you said, how much work you've done, but at least I was clear. And it becomes a point of reference. Let's say I say that. And I find you advising me nevertheless, which happens often. And then I say, thank you, really appreciate that feedback. But as I said, remember I said that, Kristen? I said, right now, I'm not open to any feedback. It's too hot for me. Like, let me ask you when I'm ready to hear that. I'm not hearing that right now. So when you say, it's called prevention. When you say what you're wanting, it really helps you to get what you're wanting. And most people say, but that was obvious. Well, to whom? It wasn't obvious to me a minute ago. I couldn't even clarify what I was requesting. How could it be obvious to you? So that is my invitation to you. One, to model it. Two, to request it. clearly. And three, if they go away from your request, gently bring them back. It's just like meditation to the anchor. As I said, I appreciate it, but not right now.
Thank you. Can you clarify how to model understanding and acknowledging and then advising too? Like saying something like, I understand. Yeah, I guess, or you, I guess you could ask a question. Tell me more about what you're feeling, or I want to make sure I
Exactly.
understand. And
Exactly.
then.
And then if you have this urge, sometimes it's like, I have the urge. Then you say, I have some suggestions. Is this a good time to share it with you? And they may say no. They may say just one. If they're well trained, like my children, they say one suggestion, mom. It's okay. One suggestion. My one suggestion is, so I go through my list and pick the best one. And I say, what about this? Say thank you. And that's it. I end it because I know better and I want them to come back again. So that's it. Ask. It's the underutilized thing in human communication, asking. Simple asking. What would you like? How can I help? Is this what you need? Please let me know. I mean, it's so simple. And then wait for the answer, by the way. Sometimes we ask and then we go on with what we want to offer. What would you, how can I help you? Silence. Let the person figure out and tell you. And it might be, even then, it might be the wrong thing, but they will know at least we respected them and we asked them. Because most of the time, what I offer you is what I think is right for me, not for you. It's like sending my clothes to you, wanting you to wear them. It's like, they were really good for me, but I don't know if you like the color, if it's the right size, even if the style goes with you or you want it, but like I send it to you. So that's how asking. It's a very simple exercise. Learn to
Thank you.
ask instead of tell.
And so for understanding, it's like asking, tell me how you're doing or how you're feeling or tell me more about that.
Yeah, I have this statement which is very helpful. Tell me what you would like to tell me. Because you see, when I say, tell me more, I'm instructing. It's really interesting. Language is so interesting. I'm still instructing you to disclose more information, and maybe you're not ready. Tell me what you would like to tell me. It could be that I don't like the weather today. It could be more of my pain that happened or the incident that I was wanting to say. Let the person determine. You are saying by that, I'm here. My attention is on you. You choose what wants to be shared. Tell me what you want to tell me, or what would help you? What should we talk about? Do you want to talk more about this? If you want to give more information and more elaboration, do you want to talk more about it? Would you like to change the subject? Do you want to go just for a walk? Sometimes it's the best thing. Just quiet, silent walk. I don't know. It depends on what they need. Some people like to talk a lot about their issues and pains. Some people like to process it, then share. Some people want advice. I don't know. It depends. I can, one size does not fit all. It never has. That's an illusion.
Thank you.
2 minutes to leave. Quick one, Seppi.
Quick one, just based on what she said, Kristen. So, even when you know it's something that is completely not the best for them, we should not be giving them the advice.
It's the steak that I'm not hungry for. You're waking me up at 3 a.m. and telling me this is the best steak in town. And I'm saying, go and eat it. Leave me alone. I want to sleep right now. Just imagine unsolicited advice, even wonderful advice, is like the best steak that we offer somebody in the middle of the night. Chris is laughing.
Even
So,
though it's going to damage them and hurt them.
It doesn't matter. I'm not going to eat it anyway. So who cares what's going to be happening after that? I'm not going to eat that steak because I want to sleep right now. So you have brought me the most amazing filet mignon, grass-fed and organic, made by the chef of the world. I'm sleeping. And this is when our advice is the steak. I mean, I'm not going to even talk about the fact sometimes it's a really burnt piece of meat that is really bad. But let's say I have the steak of the century. It rarely happens, but let's say I do. Magic has happened. Yeah, it's a beautiful note on which we should say goodbye. The fact is, we are all work in progress. Respect that and respect you and their journey. There is nothing wrong. And nothing has ever gone wrong. Everything is going according to plan, and we are exactly where we need to be in order to take the next step into growth and elevation of our souls. Have a wonderful rest of the Sunday. Turn on, Leo, come on, unmute yourself and say goodbye.
Thank
Bye.
you.
Thank you
Bye.
so much.
Bye.
Thank
Bye,
you.
Thank you,
everyone.
Mitra.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you,
See you
everyone.
later.
Thank you. Ciao.